This is CliffCentral.com.
Hello, welcome back. Your 80s half hour here on CliffCentral.com. No, that was just a musical interlude while we get a podcast in order for you to check out everything in the first hour. Big thanks to Anthea from Cartesian Capital. She is, of course, our finance fitness person, though, is coming in shortly. Joe Camino has been in the show before, and he is a bundle of energy, and he's a whirlwind of information that we cannot turn a blind eye to. This dude really does know his stuff, and he'll be with us shortly. Now, on Friday, when George Meany was here, the auto trader feature every Friday, bringing you up to date on all that's happening in the world of motoring, he spoke about a woman who kind of drove from Cape Town to London in like a Toyota Taz or Toyota Corolla.
Yeah, I remember.
So we got this message from Val Adamson, and she said, "Hi, Ben, I heard you yourself and George Meany talking about Julia, the Cape Townian grandmother who drove a 20-year-old Toyota Corolla from Cape Town to London. She is now on her way back. She's driving back to Cape Town. Her journey is broken down into stages, and family members or friends drive each stage with her. Her grandson, Tom, is joining her in Italy next week for this section." So this woman is driving back. It wasn't enough that she drove to London. She's now driving back.
I didn't know she was a gran. That changes everything. How gran is gran?
We said like she was in her 80s.
What?
But now
that's legend.
If Toyota doesn't give her something really special, Toyota, do the right thing. I mean, she should be coming home to a pretty special car in the driveway.
Please.
London and back.
It'll be a missed opportunity.
Also, this could also classify as the longest Uber trip on Earth.
Really?
Well, yeah, it's a Toyota Corolla.
Taz has stood the test of time, though.
Absolutely amazing. Amazing what some people do when you put your mind to it. Now, we spoke about bets at the start of the show. There was another bet that took place over the weekend. It was between David Beckham and Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Of course, they were their countries were doing battle in the quarterfinal of the World Cup. And unfortunately for Zlatan, he was kind of where Poppy was. There was no chance of winning, but they went ahead anyway. So Zlatan Ibrahimovic has now moved to LA to play football over there. So his bet was that if he wins, then David Beckham has to take him to IKEA to furnish his house, essentially. And if they would furnish it, but that was the gist of the bet. Whereas David Beckham said, "Okay, cool, I'll take you to IKEA and buy you all you need for your new mansion. But if England win, I want you to come watch an England game at Wembley wearing an England shirt and enjoy fish and chips at halftime."
Yep.
So we know where that went.
Yep. That's going to be fun. That's going to be all kinds of fun.
Yeah, but that's what must be so cool. When you're like a sporting legend, and Zlatan, he has achieved a whole bunch. David Beckham is David Beckham. You get to this part of your career, and then it's like you can just make bets, have fun, do these other cool things. Speaking of the World Cup, now I told you that France are very much the favorites kind of going from here. And it's not hard to work out. They've got so many players. Got players in all the right positions. They've got star qualities. They've got youth. They've got experience. And they've got goal scorers. Simple as that. They put 4 against Argentina, and they scored 2 against Uruguay.
Who's top in terms of goals at this World Cup at the moment? Is it France?
I'm not per team. I think it was Belgium. I think it still is Belgium.
Oh.
And, of course, France and Belgium will now do battle.
See, now I'm tempted to bet on that game.
Okay, Poppy, let's just pay one bet at a time here, okay? And then we can retake it from there. So I've got a little clip I'm going to play before we move into our second finance feature. It's around why so many players around the world come from France. So you might think, but hang on a second, France steals so many different players because...
I was about to say, they're all African.
Basically, the whole French team is African. I know, but there's a whole different spin on this, which I'm going to play for you here, about France and why so many players in this world are actually essentially... French. No, crap, I've got the wrong clip. Sorry, Poppy.
Summarize. Pricey there.
No, I can't. I prepared clips for today, some good informative clips, and I've got the wrong one. Oh, bear with me. Here it is. You know, like when something comes up on your screen and you click it, and then it moves because your internet's slow. Well, that just happened to me. Anyway, this is what I was talking about.
They have a clear connection to, including the country.
So if you have links to other countries, FIFA allows you to choose whichever country you want to play for.
It's to play for any nation they have a clear connection to, including the country a player's parents or grandparents are from. In this year's World Cup, 82 players are playing for countries they weren't born in. So, where are they coming from? If we plot it on a map, one country stands out. France is where the largest number of all World Cup players were born. Brazil has the next highest total, but it's not even close. France has had the most native players and coaches in the last four World Cups, and their dominance has been on the rise. So, what's so special about France? At the end of World War II, much of France was destroyed. The government began recruiting laborers from southern and eastern Europe, as well as colonies in northern Africa, to rebuild the country during the late 1940s and 1950s. During that time, France brought in more immigrants than any other European country, and in the 1960s and early 70s, France's economy grew rapidly, and a labor shortage led to another wave of immigrants, with even more arrivals from French colonies throughout Africa and the Caribbean. Many of them settled in major housing developments just outside of the major cities. At the same time, France was also in a sports crisis, especially the national football team. Between 1960 and 1974, France failed to qualify for three World Cups and three European championships. The French Football Federation decided the way to get better was to create a national structure for developing talent, so it established one of Europe's first football academy systems. In 1972, a national training center was opened in Vichy, and 4 years later, the federation worked with top French football clubs to set up a wider network of academies to recruit and train local youth. In 1988, the national training center moved to a forested suburb south of Paris called Clairefontaine. And by the early 1990s, this French soccer system was one of the best in the world, developing talented players all over France. And the system delivered results. Forward. Zidane! Zidane again! In 1998, the French national team, called Les Bleus, won the World Cup, a moment that was celebrated throughout the country. And it seemed to be a breakthrough for French multiculturalism as well, since several players were either immigrants themselves or children of immigrants who came to France in the 20th century. The team was called Black Blanc Bleu, meaning Black White Arab, a spin on the three colors of the French flag. But not everyone supported diversity, particularly nationalist politicians like Jean-Marie Le Pen.
Je trouve que c'est tout de même un peu artificiel de faire venir des joueurs de l'étranger et de les baptiser.
Yeah, this guy's basically saying you can't just come here, rock up here, and decide that you're going to be French. There's always this side of the story. Let me try to fast forward this guy. He's not very interesting.
Criticism, players from immigrant families have continued to make up more and more of France's best talent. Many come from one place in particular. 38% of immigrants to France settle in Greater Paris. Most end up in these areas, called banlieue. The French word literally means suburb, but it can also imply immigrant-dominated ghettos. Over the years, these areas have frequently seen riots. They have high levels of unemployment, crime, and poverty, and are in a crisis. Yet the banlieue continue to produce some of the most talented soccer players. That's because this is where France's immigration history meets its soccer system, and it's the reason why the city is the world's number one talent pool for soccer. Since 2002, the number of Parisian-born players at the World Cup has continued to rise. Out of all French players at the 2018 World Cup, 16 were born or raised in Greater Paris. The French national team has 8 from the banlieue, all children of immigrants. That includes Kylian Mbappe, France's 19-year-old superstar, who was born to an Algerian mother and Cameroonian father in the Parisian suburb of Bondy and was trained through the French system at Clairefontaine. But Parisian players don't just play for France. Over the years, FIFA's eligibility rules have allowed them to play for countries like the Ivory Coast, Morocco, Algeria, Portugal, Cameroon, and Togo. 4 players on this year's Senegal team are from the Greater Paris area, as well as this player on Tunisia. And remember this photo? Both of these players were born in Paris. That's what's special about French soccer. The combination of an established academy system and its unique immigration history is producing incredible talent for France and the rest of the world.
So there's quite a lot of things at play here. Firstly, yes, France had the most players in the World Cup because of the whole immigration thing, but the fact that so many of them just all kind of go to Paris, that Paris is the biggest kind of contributor to talent around the world. Like, but now if we were to take that, just think of that model of what you just heard there, and you had to apply that to South Africa and getting sport, we don't have to worry about immigrants and stuff. We just have so many kids that want to make something of their lives. We have so many different kinds of talents are coming into this country who are in this country already. And if we had an academy system as jacked as France decided to have with their football, we could be world beaters in everything. Cricket, rugby, football.
I was about to say more cricket. I think we have that kind of in place. Like if you look at the likes of the current team right now in terms of players that are young, the likes of Pitlugwayo as well as Rabada, I think they've gone through the right kind of channels and system, and I think we get it right there. With soccer though, guys, I don't know why as South Africans we still want to be a soccer playing nation. Like, it's not our thing.
Everyone loves football though.
Yeah, we can love it. It doesn't mean it has to be our thing. Like, we're good at cricket, we're good at rugby, we're way better than we've ever been at athletics.
Why?
With
because
the current
people,
crop.
People are doing things at grassroots. At football, nothing happens here. That's why we're so crap.
But that's what I'm saying, because we're not, that's not for us. Like, it's not our thing.
Probably everything's for us. All our sports are for us. Just that there's no, that everything you just heard there, 0% happens in SA. Zero. This whole, like, fiasco around the PSL, that's what these guys are good at. They're good at hiring lawyers. They're not good at developing players. So if you want to know why Bafana might not be at World Cups or they can never ever contest, because we've never had the foresight of what the French have done.
So sure, but what we had players like Lucas Radebe, who else? Benny McCarthy was also pretty decent. He made it through. How did those guys, with the minimal sort of channels that they had, make it as far as they did?
Went overseas. They got overseas exposure.
They must have been good here first to get there.
Sure. But then they went overseas and they got opportunities to make it over there. They were talented players. They had application. They had drive. Guys, now, what kind of drive have they got?
So that's not, like I said, that's not everyone else's problem. If there's no drive in South Africa, there's no drive. That's not for us to now figure out. We must forget about soccer, guys. Otherwise, our hearts are still going to be broken. We must just host. We're great hosts.
All right.
You really want us to be a soccer-playing nation?
No, this nation wants us to be a soccer-playing nation. You look out there, everyone cares about football. That's like kind of the world's number one sport, and everybody wants to play football.
Do you know what's scary? Is that I know more about European football.
Everyone does, sure.
Than I do with what's going. This whole AX thing, I was like, guys, why do we care? It's not going to do anything for us. But Mbappe, we care about.
Yeah, who has the, is also from the Beauteleu, whatever it's called, the suburbs of Paris. Very interesting. Sibs, you with us? Yep. Sibs, if you can bring Joe in, I think it's time to get into the more structured part of the conversation today. So, you know, this year's been, let's just say, what's the word we can really use? Traumatic might be a word. You know, like with VAT going up, with various taxes going up, petrol price going up, it's just becoming harder and harder to kind of make ends meet, as they say in the old classics. I always hated that phrase because it makes it sound like we're living in wartime, as you're given a tin of Spam every single day. But it is. I mean, this is the realities that we've got to be around. So we can't just concede, roll over and die. We've got to find ways that we can still manage to actually get into the system, stay in the system, and manage to maintain and keep wealth. Now, the last time Joe was here, he had a hat. And on this hat was chopped up credit cards. He wore them like badges. And that's what Joe's about. He's about cutting through all the crap. And that's why we love having him on here. Joe, how are you doing this morning?
Excellent, excellent. I just feel sorry for a lot of those people who are in the cars right now on their way to work doing that 45-minute to an hour drive each way. Enough to be broke after payday.
which is the beginning of the month, and you're broke.
Yeah.
Now, Joe, you've given me some interesting things to kind of go over here. I'm sure if we had to basically just let you run, you could probably go an hour by yourself, because I've never met a guy more passionate about a subject matter than you when it comes to finance. But it's just the first thing that comes to mind is that we are now paying more VAT. I mean, it's a scandalous system. The government is so inept that they've actually now got to take an extra percent of us. They are that terrible at being somewhat like a ruling party. For your first take on this, I mean, what does this really mean? Is it a big deal for us, or is it just something else to moan about? I mean, how does it all kind of work out in the grand scheme of things, the extra percent of VAT?
Well, when I wrote an article about the e-tag, I ended it with, when the government wants money, they're going to get it. You're going to have to pay it. And I'm quite against VAT personally, because I don't see any value. Even though that's
ironic,
what it's
named.
Yeah, it is. Huh? And it's actually hurting a lot of people. And get ready, because, I mean, that's just the start. I remember 2 years ago when they said, oh, we're not going to raise VAT. It's a political hot potato. And that's the way it starts in government. First, they deny it.
Yeah.
Then slowly but surely, they'll work it in. Well, we could raise VAT, but we're not going to. And the next thing, you know, boom, there it is. So,
but it's just 1%.
Yeah, well, that's just one part of it. I mean, you know, when you look at Moody's, the ratings agency, they said there's two reasons where they could put South Africa in junk status: economic and political instability. And we definitely have both.
Trying to, definitely.
Yeah, and that's coming around the corner. I mean, if you look at all the latest taxes, the sin taxes went up. Petrol's going up again next month. Electricity keeps going up. Food prices, taxi fares. They raised excise duties on vehicles another 5%. So when you buy a car in America, you pay $30,000 for it. Well, at 15 to 1, that's 450,000 450,000 rand here, but you'll see you'll pay probably about 540 for it. It's a huge tax that they have on that thing, and that's gone up. There's a new carbon initiative coming in January of 2019. It's hampering people. It's stopping them from being able to have money and enjoy life. They're paying all the bills and living on what's left, and they've actually been programmed to think like that, and they don't know it.
That's a very good point, because, I mean, when you've been here in previous times, you just think that people think debt and all this credit card stuff, it just becomes a norm. And with all of these things escalating before our very eyes, you're right, it comes into this kind of norm. So, I mean, it actually kind of hurts my head, especially when you talked about that excise tax now on new cars. Now, cars are, in my mind, they're lovely until you have to buy one, and it's absolutely dreadful. Do you see us getting to a point now where if you see someone in really expensive cars, they're either criminal or they're just insane to spend this much money? Is it becoming such a terrible purchase in the grand scheme of things?
Agreed. And, you know, a lot of people buy a car, they have their own businesses, and I always like brand new businesses when they buy the Mercedes and everything. If you're going to do something stupid, do that. Because you first got to start making some money. You know, this appearance of wealth doesn't really exist. It's there, but the people who live it, I mean, when I do my workshops for the corporates, I ask the people, who's bought a new car in the last 6 months? How long was it a new car? A week. Well, you've got that payment for 60 more months or 72 more months, so enjoy your 1 week.
Wow, you must make a lot of friends quickly here.
and I try to tell them, because when I bought my car, you know, they say the car loses 20% when it drives up, when you drive it off the lot. Well, mine lost about 35% when I drove it off the lot. So I try to encourage people, you know, instead of buying a new car, buy a one-year-old.
Yeah.
Because that guy who bought the car initially, he took the hit, the major hit on all those maximum commissions and everything else that they put on there. So you can walk in. Sure, it's got a few kilometers on it, but you're not going to be paying those exorbitant sums. And what they've been doing with vehicles now is this balloon loan. And people are just signing up for it left and right, and they have no idea what's coming down the road.
So just in layman's terms, the balloon loans, that they give you these really attractive terms. It's like, get this car for $599 per month, and, you know, zero deposits, all that kind of stuff. But you don't ever hear, and you get this amazing balloon loan. Those things don't really come into it. They say T's and C's apply.
Yeah, the old
T's. Is that
T's
the T's and C's?
Well, no, because they put it on the screen in lawyer language so small, you got to get a magnifying glass for your big screen TV to read it. But bottom line with the balloon loan is, in one of the best sales aspects I've heard was, we can find a payment program to fit your budget.
We can find a prison sentence to work your life into.
Yeah, it does. The problem is after 6 years, the car may not be worth the balloon. And you know, what I have here in front of me is a 400,000 rand car. If it depreciates at 20% a year, in 6 years, it's worth 104,000. So if you got a 50% balloon, you're going to owe 200. Wow. So your final payment is 200,000 rand. I don't know too many people out there that have that sitting around in the bank. So they say, well, we can refinance it. Well, if you got a car worth 104,000, the bank is not going to give you 200,000.
But this almost sounds criminal. Isn't it like...
Sorry to interrupt you, but I think the National Credit Regulator should be involved in this.
Sure.
But because it's not hurting them today... I don't think they're willing to look at it. And, of course, they need to sell cars. And, you know what I mean? So you don't want to hamper the industry too hard.
Tick the economy over and all those other excuses. Bingo. But, like, all the things that you say, if these things are escalating as far as people have less buying power, then surely these kind of payment plans to suit your life need to be amended as well. Because, this, like you said, if you got 200,000 rand left in a balloon, if you had that kind of money, you wouldn't be in this payment situation to start with. So no one's got that. But now you're refinancing nothing, essentially.
Exactly. It's keeping up with the Joneses, the Motseppis, and the Naidus. That's what it is. I just saw a beautiful Jaguar, that F-Type, on the way in here. Oh, I love... Oh, one day. Well, not in this lifetime. Maybe next lifetime. But I couldn't even imagine how much that payment is.
But, Joe, these cars keep getting shinier all around us. I mean, obviously, in Johannesburg, it's a great example of being the metropolis of what it is. But you look around, there's not a lot of shitty cars out there.
No, but I'll tell you this. When I got here in 96... All I saw was Merc and BMW. Now I see the Kias and, you know, all the different small Chinese brands. And so people are, they're feeling the pain, but they're still taking it on loan.
Sure.
And that takes them into 4, 5, 6 years down the road still on loan. And that's why with this balloon, you know, if you really think about it, when you're young and in love, you know, you meet Mr. Almost Right Now or whatever, you buy this car. And then in 6 years, you could have a couple children. Well, with each child, your finances gets worse.
A lot worse.
And you got this balloon coming, and it's, you know, they make it sound like, whoopee, it's a balloon. Remember when you were a kid? Balloon, you know? Well, this one blows up. This one doesn't pop. And they need to start looking at the long term. You know, I asked people, how many of you own a home? They raised their hands. I said, own the home. They don't own the home. A lot of people leave the house they don't own. Get in the car this morning they don't own, put on clothes they don't own, and they go into work and they're miserable because they have no money. Well, they look good, but, you know,
it's that facade. They've got these things, these boxes ticked.
Agreed.
But that would take us to, okay, so in the eye of the storm of all these different things happening, what's your take on us getting into being a first-time homeowner at the moment?
Well, you know, I'm glad Magnus Haystick is back into the thing, but I've got an article right here that says residential property is a 10-year bear market. And it says, wannabe homeowners that get involved in a market which on average has declined 23% in real terms over the last 10 years.
Wow.
Now, you got to remember that Moody's is still sitting out there looking at our political and economic instability. And if we do go to junk status, interest rates could pop fast and hard. And a lot of people out there might remember 1999 when home bond interest rates were 19%.
Mm-hmm.
So personally, I'm saying for a lot of people, start saving your money. Because even in the downturn, and I called it back in 2004 and 5 with the housing bubble, they said there was no bubble. I bought a property at the coast. It was $485,000. It was a plot. I paid $110,000. So when interest rates start rising, last time in 2008, there was something like over 200,000 houses in repossession. So those who have money in a downturn score. Mm-hmm. Those who don't. You know, with the home bond, the car loan, the credit cards, the store accounts, over, all those interest rates go up, and what little left they have at the end of the month is now gone.
Exactly.
And I see it coming. I see it coming.
Well, it's inevitable when you look at all the other little factors. So, it's like a cliche thing to say, there is never a better time to be more liquid with your money and obviously save something. So to overextend yourself into a property market now might not be the best thing.
Correct. And
to stick more in sort of a rental frame while you actually develop some capital would be the only way to go.
Correct. I mean, they lure them with these 100% loans that they're not giving, but they just get you in there. And now you want to be a homeowner. You want to get a 20-year mortgage payment whilst you have the credit card and the car loan. And then one day you wake up, like I said, and you've got all this debt and you're miserable. So I'd say hold back a little while, get some good investment in there, and don't save it in a bank because banks have not beat inflation in over 20 years. Saving the bank's guaranteed loss. That's the way it is. Don't take financial advice from people behind bulletproof glass. That's what I teach.
That's fantastic. Now, insurances are going up as well. How is that? Is that because of the relative value of things is going up, skyrocketing what it is?
No, they just keep increasing your payments every year. I mean, I have it out with my guy every year because, you know, he wants to raise my car insurance premium and my home, contents insurance because everything keeps going up. Well, all my stuff's actually getting older.
Yeah.
So I don't let him raise it. I don't let him raise it. You don't need it. I mean, I've got an article from 2013 on vehicles that says that the insurance companies are supposed to adjust your premium each year in line with your car's value. They're supposed to do that. Do they? No,
they
don't.
I think only one company prides itself in doing that. That was their whole go-to-market strategy.
Yeah, but, I just went through something with an insurance company, but not an accident or anything like that. You know, it's great to have insurance, but when they look for any reason whatsoever to pay you, you know what I mean?
They will. They have specialists in that matter. Yeah.
Yes, they will. I mean, that's why I took Tracker out of my car. They can gauge, and Discovery has one too. Or if you're getting an accident, they don't hear anything. They immediately call the police. Well, as one of them's comedians said, I'd hate to be a drunk and in an accident, and then we're calling the police. No.
but I heard, I don't know if this is a bit of a conspiracy, maybe you have some thoughts on this, that if we are going to say, okay, cool, put a tracker in because our premiums will become low because now we're being responsible. So you can see that I brake nice and I'm fuel efficient, all this kind of stuff. But now they're picking up all your behaviors. So they know when you leave the house. They know your kind of behavioral stuff on a week-to-week basis. Suddenly, if you have an accident at 2 in the morning, they're going to go, well, hang on a second. This is very out of behavior for you. So there must have been something wrong here. You must be on alcohol or drugs or something or other. So therefore, we're going to look into it. So it almost seems like it's like counterproductive to be so monitored.
Correct. Telemetrics is what they call it.
Okay, so yeah. If they want to find a reason, they now have all different
bingo.
Reasons.
Bingo. You get in an accident, and then they look at your wreck and go, look, he was doing 90 in a 45-kilometer zone. Hmm. You are now partially responsible for that accident. So whatever the outcome of that is, it may be reduced because of your participation in causing it as well. So and you said your tracker, your insurance goes down. Actually, mine didn't. I compared with Tracker and without Tracker, and I save it's about $10 difference not having Tracker. So I got rid of Tracker because I don't want them to ever come back to me and go, you were speeding, or as you said, it's control. You're being controlled.
Yeah, but Joe, we've spoken about the big ones, the house and the car. What else are people really getting into debt with at the moment? You know, is it something that's like another sort of worry that is out there that people aren't really paying heed to?
Boy, it's probably the personal loan industry. I mean, I get a barrage all the time, whether it's an email or whether it's an SMS, and I don't know how they get my phone number, but I'm getting these SMSs, the Wonga loans and all that other stuff. It's just in your face constantly, and I know a lot of people are taking these loans to pay other debt.
Yeah.
And these are unsecured loans, so these could be 19 to 25% interest, which hurts. It hurts. And they give you a minimum payment that'll keep you there for years and years and years. And that's the worrying one for me. A lot of people's credit cards are maxed out. Mm-hmm. And when I was with McDonald's a couple weeks ago, I asked the manager there, what percentage of people use a card? And he said 75 to 80%. So some of that might be debit cards. But when you're using a credit card to pay for a 39 Rand Happy Meal, you should admit you have a problem. And that's one of the things I'd like to tell everybody listening today. Take the credit cards out of your wallet. That's the only way you're going to stop using them. It really worked effectively for me. Now, women sometimes say, I use it for emergencies only. Well, black pumps, 50% off, emergency. You know what I mean? We do that to ourselves.
Obviously.
You know? Yeah, my girlfriend was like, that's why I used that example. She used to do that. And as long as it's in your wallet, when is the last time you actually used cash? Or better yet, ladies, I'm going to pick on you because you care a lot more. You buy the clothes for the children and everything. When's the last time you went up to the till and you put 1,000 rands worth of clothes up there and you reached in your pocketbook and you only had about 700 rand and you said, put this back, put that back? Probably long.
Going to go with small numbers on that.
Long time ago. They say cash is king, you know. But people say, this is Joburg. You can't carry cash. I said, you don't have any. So don't worry about it. It's a non-issue.
But I guess in other ways that some of these banks try to tie you into these loyalty things. The more you use, the more you can save, and you get like these virtual add-ons and stuff. Would you say that's negligible in the greater scheme of things?
Agreed. Spend and save. Wait a minute.
So it's like spend, and then you get free stuff elsewhere.
It's a bit of control. They know what you're doing. They know, you know. And people do that. I mean, at the club I go to, Santon Sports Club, I hear it all the time. Well, I'm getting Kalula Moolah. I'm getting frequent flyer miles, you know. But as I said in my classes, when we go in a room of about 50 people and I ask them, how many of you when you got your credit cards, going to pay all your credit cards in full every month? I get all their hands. I said, okay, now how many of you pay all your credit cards in full currently? And I usually get one person, and I go, be quiet. You know, you live with your parents. But nobody does. They're all hooked in, and they're done. They're done. And if they don't get rid of that credit card and stop it, just take it out of your wallet, it's going to be the eventual downfall of them, because as interest rates go up, and it looks like that's going to happen, that extra money you have is going to disappear.
I have a question. Sort of tracking my own spending habits. Do people spend more when they have money in their wallet? So sometimes I have like cold hard cash, like lots of money in my wallet, and I find that I can't seem to track whether I spend more when the money's actually in my wallet or when I'm swiping with my card.
Generally,
when you're swiping.
Swiping. It's a casino thing.
Because you can't see the money.
If you went to a casino, right, and you put money out instead of those chips, you would feel that a lot more. With swiping, you're pinning yourself to debt is what you're doing. You're not feeling it. You know what I mean? It's great.
Okay. Fascinating.
Cool.
That's pretty much spot on. Joe, where else can we find your words of wisdom? Because it's quite funny, a lot of things you say here, we've been hearing in different sort of stages in our finance with Anthony every single Monday. And this whole thing about the interest rate coming, as you say, it's coming. This is like one of those things, like a Game of Thrones, you know, like the white walkers are coming. Yeah. So we've got to be in a position of strength, ultimately, what your big message is here.
Well, again, take the credit cards out of your wallet. Do not make any major purchases. Major purchases are going to hurt you right now. If you've got a car, it's running fine. It might, you know, if it's an older car, maybe it might break down here or there, but there's no payment on it.
Yeah.
So you could have used the payment to fix it up. I wouldn't really go into the field and start making any major purchases or taking on any additional credit right now. Because and for those of you who want to buy a house, you should anticipate a 3% increase in the interest rate when you go for that payment. Because most people choke themselves trying to get the best house with the best payment that they can possibly afford. And then when interest rates go up, boom, the house of cards falls.
Wow.
So I wouldn't really get into any major purchases right now. I would sit back, pay off what you can, because if the stick hits the fan, you want to be prepared. You don't want to be on the losing end.
Exactly. Joe, thanks. It's well timed, because I think people get to a stage where it suddenly becomes a norm and a con't. We can't get to the stage. It's a very real problem with this whole interest rate hike. And of course, with the VAT going up, just going through this list again, it just makes me hate government more and more. The fact that they, like you say, when they want money from you, they'll take money from you.
That's just the way it is. And they're taking and taking and taking. And I come from Illinois right now, which is broke, and Chicago specifically. And people are fleeing these states because they just raised the property rates, which is what they're doing here. They just raised my house. They issued the new pricing for the rates. So the rates go up. So you're going to keep getting hounded. They take from the people who have, give to the people who don't have. And that people who have, they're coming to the breaking point right now.
Completely.
And it's very, very serious. This country needs some new initiatives. And
it's just that maybe not have Robin Hood economics. That's maybe not like the best way to put everything's interest into that. It's like, well, we can take from them because it's a bottomless pit. It's not. You can't squeeze people this much. It really is. Oh, and the sugar tax as well, and the sin taxes, and the whole thing about electricity as well. And again, like you say, all of this comes back to rating agencies. Everyone's looking at this. No one's going, oh, I wonder what's happening. Everyone knows exactly what's going on here. And the more they dick around with this stuff, the more interest rates are going to hike up.
Well, this country has a nice way of selling itself on ideas. You keep listening to the journalists. I mean, I go on a lot of the websites, and I put my notes at the bottom. They tell you what you want to hear. You know, they're very pro-South Africa, and I understand that. But the international countries, they don't look at all that local journalism. They look at the facts.
Yeah.
And the facts are kind of scary, actually.
You don't see rating agencies go, well, we've ascertained all the sentiment from this last quarter. We're now going to make a judgment on that. Not the slightest. Joe, thanks so much for your time, as always.
Cool, no problem.
It's just nice to get a big slap in the face when it comes to this kind of stuff. That's exactly what you teach and exactly what you're about.
Take your credit cards out of your wallet. Quit using them, ladies and gentlemen.
It doesn't get much simpler than that, hey, Poppy?
I don't have a credit card. I quit it a long time ago.
How many boyfriends?
None at the moment, believe it or not. Okay, it's good. Been 18 months.
Don't rush it. Oh, quick note.
Yes. How many boyfriends?
Which is one thing I wanted to mention. For those of you who are falling in love and having children, wait.
What are we waiting for?
Well, you know, my good friend Jimmy Jammin' Johnson, who's no longer with us, when I met him later in life, he said, Joe, when I was young, when I was 21 when I was married, she was 20, they had three kids in 5 years, and they were on entry-level incomes. So the stress of not having money caused divorce. Mm-hmm. Now, when you get divorced, the wife makes sure that child gets 25 years worth of college education, so you pay that child support. But when he was 42, he got remarried. He goes, now I have a house, I'm earning much better income, I'm actually enjoying my family. So I would just encourage those of you who want to get married out of university or whatever, wait. Don't rush it. Wait till you're in your 30s to have children, because if you continue to struggle with entry-level income, 2 out of 3 divorces are from marriage. I mean,
I get you from financial pressures in the marriage, yeah.
And the main reason for divorce is money. And ladies, you're told about this when you're up at the altar. They say, until debt do us part. So y'all think it's death. It's debt. Go back, look at the video.
Damn you, Hugh Grant videos. It's so true. And you don't want that to perpetuate for a long time. So if you start on that foot and you're in the debt with this, there's resentment, and it's just a horrible situation from there. Joe, thanks very much for your time.
Cool, man.
We don't seem to have Rich Mulholland. He's gone missing. I don't know. I'm sorry. He's just not with us.
That's okay. Can we play music?
Okay. Well,
I need a break after that.
Poppy wants to play music. So basically, we'll play some music, and we've got an interview coming up in the third hour. One of the other Gareth replays, Vusi Mavhi-Bela, ambassador to Zimbabwe. Now, Zimbabwe's been in the news of late. Of course, there was the whole presidential coup, takeover, slash change of regime. So with Vusi, Gareth really plows into this and what's really been happening for the past 40 years. And of course, how Zimbabweans are reacting to xenophobia in this country. It's obviously a big issue. It hasn't gone away, and I can't say it'll just suddenly go away. These things can flare up again. So the interview in the next hour is going to be pretty interesting, all around that kind of stuff. But tomorrow, Gareth and Sia will be back. And with that, the show will be back to normal, I guess.
So yes.
Catch you then.
This is CliffCentral.com.